Let's make some magic happen, EOB Mafia. Welcome back to another needle-moving installment of Evolution of Brand, powered by Absolute Evolution Branding. I'm Jason Sircone, and today on episode 126, I'm sharing the mic with Matthew Meehan and Luigi Rosabianca, the founders of Shield Advisory Group and co-hosts of the Liquid Lunch Project, a phenomenal podcast you need to add to your listening rotation today. As we tap into the evolution of Matt and Luigi's brand today, we'll be discussing how these two powerful entrepreneurs found each other and ended up in business together, how you can grow your team and your brand without hiring a single employee, whether education trumps experience or vice versa, and how Matt and Luigi have used the Liquid Lunch Project to position their brand as the go-to resource for small businesses looking for capital and guidance as they scale their operations. All of this and so much more is teed up for you on episode 126 of Evolution of Brand, right after a quick word from yours truly. You know, we talk a lot about thought leadership and authority status here on Evolution of Brand, and the reason for that is the guests that I've had the privilege of connecting with focus on this each and every day. And I guarantee you, if you ask any of them if that focus has made a difference in everything they do, the answer you'd receive would be an emphatic hell yes across the board. Do you want to establish authority and become a thought leader in your niche? Then it's time for us to connect. I want to teach you the best approach I know for attracting new clients, increasing your profits, expanding your network, achieving game-changing authority status, and becoming a thought leader in your space. It's time for your brand to go from unknown to undeniable. Visit jasonsircone.com/work with me to learn more. Matt and Luigi, welcome to Evolution of Brand. Say hello to the EOB Mafia and share a time that you listened to yourself instead of what others told you was right, and it led to a major accomplishment.
Thanks for having us. And that's every single day. Every single day, somebody tells me I'm doing something wrong. It happens to be my wife, but I always think I'm right.
Well, I guess that's pretty easy to overcome. That if you're dealing with it every single day, eventually you get used to how to combat and do things by what your gut's telling you. I love it.
Yeah, no. But more serious answer on that note is, I could tell you when I first started on Wall Street, I was working 12 to 16 hours a day. I wasn't getting paid. I'd leave my house at 7 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't get home till 9:30 at night. I'd walk in, and my family was always blue collar people, and they looked at us and say, how much money did you make today? I go, nothing yet. Did you make money yet? Nothing yet. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Flash forward 2 years later, I made more money in one day than my grandfather ever made in his life.
Wow. That'll change the tune. How about you, Luigi?
Jay, first of all, thank you for having us. And I'm going to have to piggyback with my partner. You know, small business owners, we're cut from a different cloth, you know, so we kind of like going against the grain. Maybe it's genetic, maybe it's just a sociological disposition we have. But yeah, for the norm, everyone's always kind of, you know, you follow the path, right? Small business owners don't like to follow the path. Yeah, I remember as a kid, mid-20s, I remember telling my parents I'm going to open up my first business. Like, my mom literally like yelled at me, like, how dare you? What's wrong with you? Who does that? You're not going to make any money. You know, go work for a company, get some experience. You know, small business owners are like, anything you can do, I can do better. Right. So I think a small business owner probably is born with tougher skin. So we really don't care what people think because we're on a mission.
Absolutely. And I know you guys do a ton to help small business owners, and we're going to get into a lot of how you make that happen today and a whole lot more, because I'm excited to get this opportunity to bring you guys here on Evolution of Brand, because I had a blast on your podcast, The Liquid Lunch. I'm encouraging everyone listening to this show, once you get done, go check out Matt Luigi's podcast. It's some great content, and you guys are doing some phenomenal stuff, and it's become a pretty big pillar of your brand building strategy. So we're going to get into that today as well. Before we unpack all of that, guys, take a moment to tell EOB Society who you are, what you do, how the two of you came together, and what motivates you each and every day.
So we run Shield Advisory Group. That's our day job outside of the Liquid Lunch Project, right? And we help small business owners get access to credit and capital in order to scale their businesses, right? How did me and Luigi meet? It's actually a pretty funny story. Luigi and I ran in a couple of the same circles when I was working on Wall Street, and he was down doing law and architecture in New York City. And there was a basketball player by the name of Anthony Mason. I was trying to get him to come work in my firm, and he was dating me. He was dating Luigi at the time. I didn't really know that. So one day we thought we were going to close the deal. We're bringing Anthony Mason on board. It's going to be great for our firm, going to be great for my clients. So we go to this place called Top of the Six. It's a cigar lounge in New York City. Al Sharpton, Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, whoever is the big name, they actually all go to the cigar lounge, right? So we're there. We're like, he goes, guys, I hate to break the news to you, but I took a job with somebody else. So after whining and dining this guy, bringing him out, bringing him to Top of the Sixes, getting him the best cigars, he broke the news to us like a man in person. But the funny thing is, he turned out to go work for Luigi.
We served better martinis at lunch.
Well, let me ask you, what was Anthony Mason's role going to be? I mean, I'm assuming this was after his MBA career had concluded.
Yeah, it was after his MBA career. So he would be more like a client liaison.
Okay.
Right? You come in when we go out with clients, he could open up a lot more doors when you have a celebrity like that as a name, especially inside of New York City at that time, right? Nobody wants to hang out with Matt Meehan, but if I bring Anthony Mason along, it's a little bit of a different story.
He was a pretty intimidating force, if I recall, wasn't he? Or am I thinking of somebody, maybe I'm thinking of Charles Oakley. I'm trying to think back.
No, you're thinking right. I had a very embarrassing moment when he, you know, would come to lunch to the office. We actually had to buy a special chair for him. He was a big man. I mean, God bless his soul. Unfortunately, he had some physical issues and he passed away recently, but yeah, he was a good man. He wore his heart on his sleeve.
When he was working for you, Luigi, did it work out as you had envisioned when you stole him from Matt?
It's like what I do right now. When I walk into a meeting by myself, it's crickets. I walk into a meeting with Matthew Meehan. That's it. Deal is closed.
So some of that star power rubbed off. That's good to hear. So if that was the first encounter, how did things develop from there for you guys? What made you realize that you'd be able to join forces and ultimately change the world the way you have?
Well, I think with time, you get to know someone. And Matt and I are from a personality, we're very different. But from a morality compass, we both point due north. So we have the same morals and we have the same high standards. We just go about it differently. You know, Matt's a black t-shirt. I'm a blazer kind of guy. You know, so we just go about it differently, but we are very similar in business. What makes us, I think, very complementary is he's an extrovert and I'm an introvert. You know, I like operations and he's great at sales and marketing. And, you know, when I was in business, I always felt that I was lacking because I lacked for sales and marketing. And I kind of think that Matt probably felt the same, that he lacked in operations. So together, it's that classic mathematical formula, 1 + 1 = 3.
You get some of that yin and yang or yin and yang. It ultimately can lead to some great things because both of those driving forces, as long as you do have those similar viewpoints as well, you can really pull off some major gains. And clearly you guys have done just that.
When you find that nice combination in life, whether it's your spouse, significant other, working partner, JV, business partner, whatever it is, you don't even have to say.
Phenomenal podcast. You need to add to your listening rotation today. As we tap into the evolution of Matt and Luigi's brand today, we'll be
quick blurbs and we're running a business in 20 quick blurbs per day.
And you're not in the same offices. Are you working from home? How does this relationship work and for you and for all your clients?
I'm in New York City. Matthew and his lovely wife abandoned ship a few years back. You know, his political feet did the voting for him.
Where'd you land, Matthew?
I'm in Florida.
Okay.
But I left before the mass exodus, so to speak. I left about 7 years ago. Right.
You're the trendsetter.
So the writing on the wall.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about what you do with Shield Advisory. So is a lot of the business that you're doing in more of an online format, or do you both handle in-person meetings, and have you developed a team that helps you do that as well? How's it all unfolded over the years?
Both. I mean, our company is actually we've 10 to not almost 20x over the last 20 months, right?
Wow.
So we're constantly flying around the country. We're meeting clients, but the majority of our time is over the phone. We have team members all over the United States. We just hired a sales director out of California, team members in Massachusetts, Kentucky, Iowa. Where else? Where am I missing? We actually have team
Delaware.
internationally
Our
too.
fearless leader in Delaware, of course.
And in Delaware, yeah. So we're growing pretty rapidly at the moment, and it's not something that we actually planned on growing so fast. It just we're getting so much business from all over the place. Because what we do is we serve a market that's actually underserved. Business owners doing below $20 million in revenue per year. Okay. Most of our clients come to us because they think they need a quick fix, they need some money to keep their business going. What we actually do is we understand that they need more than just a check, right? So we can actually invest and lend them money in order for them to grow their business. However, we take a whole total holistic look at their business, right? Meaning somebody thinks $100,000 is going to fix their problem. But the truth of the matter is their operations aren't in order. So they're always going to be filling that bucket that has a leak in it with water. So money's not the problem. Money is just the temporary fix. So we try to get to the root cause of the problem and not just give them a solution for the symptom.
That seems like a great approach because at the same time, you're helping that small business with something they truly need some type of fix in order to get on the right path, but you're also protecting your investment at the same time.
Absolutely. Let's face it, entrepreneurs get into business because they can do something really well, or they think they could do it better than somebody else. But the truth of the matter is they probably had some type of training prior to have that courage to go out there and do something on their own, right? So as Luigi loves to say, the candlestick maker knows how to make candlesticks. The baker loves to bake a cake. The cobbler, he knows how to make shoes. However, his kids' shoes always have holes in them. Why is that? That's what we got to ask ourselves. That's because one person cannot do everything. You need to have a team approach around you. So yeah, they come to us for money. We can lend them money, but we also partner with them and give them strategic advice. This way, that cobbler can actually give his kids shoes that don't have holes because he's so tired of working all day long.
Man, I haven't heard the term cobbler in a while. I feel like throwing the Seinfeld line in there. I don't even know if I own a pair of shoes that could use a cobbling. But totally understand the analogy. It makes complete sense. And you're right. I feel like there's always something. We have this one idea, and it's always going to be the driving force behind what we do. However, there needs to be some balance in our world, and that's very hard to obtain if we're trying to wear every single hat. It's one of those things I can't cut my own hair, so I outsource that to an expert who can cut my hair and make me look good.
Jason,
Taxes,
I think the problem is even tenfold because America has become, let's admit it, very bureaucratic. So it's insufficient to just invoice a client, right? Now you need a POS system, you need a bookkeeping system, you need an accounts receivable, accounts payable. If God forbid you're brick and mortar, you need live sales, you need operations. And one of the reasons Matt and I have grown so much is we started drinking our own Kool-Aid. We realized we can't do this stuff because we're not good at it. Let's focus on what we're good at and find partners, either JV or new hires, to help us achieve what we want to achieve simply because that's not our forte.
Me and Luigi had very successful businesses before Shield Advisory Group, right? And one thing that brought us together is we never really wanted employees. I don't want employees, right? I want to hire top talent. I'll pay them more on a per project basis. And we don't have employees now. We have partners and independent contractors that work for us, right?
Matthew, what's the word you never hear early in the morning?
I'm sick. I can't come in today.
We've never heard that.
I grew my investment bank from 5 to over 80 registered reps. Luigi's grown numerous businesses, right? There's something that happens when you bring on employees. There's a different mindset. They don't feel like they have skin in the game enough, and they're never going to care as much as you. That's why anybody that we do business with, we bring them on as a partner. So they have skin in the game and they have that upside potential that they can feel when things go good. An independent contractor, on the other hand, they're hired to do a job. I don't care if they work from 7 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock that morning, but the job gets done, gets done. This is what I'm paying for. You know, we don't have to worry about people calling in sick overall. You know, we don't have to worry about benefits. We don't have to worry about all the nonsense that makes being a business owner no fun. If the independent contractor is very simple, if they're not performing, we get rid of them and we move on, right? We don't have to worry about any HR issues at that point.
A friend of mine that owns a restaurant had just posted on Facebook the other day that I have COVID is the new, my car broke down, because that used to be the big excuse the restaurant people would get. Someone can't cover their shift because their car broke down. Well, now it's that they have COVID. So eliminating that from your world makes a ton of sense. Do you feel like more companies and more brands as a whole are going to start to adopt that type of approach so they can start to eliminate those excuses? Because to me, it seems like a perfect model.
It's already happening. The writing's been on the wall. Google, Meta, and Amazon have been doing it for years,
right,
prior to COVID-19, right? Mm-hmm. Google actually has more freelancers, independent contractors, gig workers, whatever you want to call them, more of them than they have full-time employees. Think about that for a second,
yeah,
right? And it's not just because they don't want to deal with wages and HR issues. Truth of the matter is, for the last 2 decades, the non-farm payroll numbers, meaning anybody who's employed outside of agriculture, has been declining steadily. But COVID accelerated that, right, in 2021. There's a trend right now in the United States that by the year 2027, 50 to 60% of the United States workforce will be freelancers.
I can absolutely see that. Again, there's so many advantages to it. And another one that we haven't really spoke about, but you can speak to this because you guys are doing it, is when you give somebody that type of freedom to work their own hours, as long as the job gets done and they're fulfilling their part of the agreement, it allows them to feel like they're a little bit more involved in the overall process. Their creativity becomes more, or it comes more to the forefront, and you're ultimately making somebody feel like a valuable part of the team and not just a number, which is a lot of what some employees feel depending on the company they work for.
Jay, you're right, but there are macro sociological changes at play. America has transitioned into a service-based economy. We don't make a lot of widgets. You know, we don't do a lot of stuff. Everything is service-based. So this is a phenomenon of a service-based culture. You know, if I'm manufacturing a car, I can't delegate that. I've got to be at the plant, right? If I'm reaping some crops, I've got to be on that tractor, right? So the transition of the American economy has allowed this. You know, that 18-year-old boy in the late 70s and 80s, his dream was to work for IBM or GE or Texas Instruments. You know, you put in your 30 years, you get your 2.7 cars, your 2.2 kids, the white picket fence, and that's the American dream. Mm-hmm. You tell an 18-year-old kid today, hey, what's your dream? What do you want to be when you grow up? I think it's very different.
Oh, I don't think there's any argument there. It couldn't be more 180. I mean, I think about a story that I heard from my brother-in-law's brother was telling me about a kid he used to coach soccer. He's 20. Well, this was a few years ago, but he's 21 at the time, already a millionaire, made that money through a Twitch channel playing video games. If I would have thought back when I was a kid that I could have turned that into a career, I probably would have ran with it. I I've had that conversation with kids that I've spent, whether it's my friend's kids or whatever, just thinking, how the hell do you enjoy watching these guys play video games? Wouldn't you rather play it yourself and challenge yourself to beat the game? And every one of them, no, it's fine. All right, I guess we're all entertained differently, right?
But let's dig a little bit deeper there. It's not just about playing video games.
I get that. I understand that. But sure.
You know, Gen Z in total, I mean, they're armed with the internet. They have technology skills that none of us had growing up.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right.
100%.
But more importantly than that, they don't trust corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have loyalty. They don't care about job security. The reason for this, and they're going to be the new workforce. By 2025, they're going to enter or be the majority of the workforce, right? Mm-hmm. So By the time that happens, they're not going to trust a big corporation for job security when they've seen their parents laid off over the last 10 years, three different times, and the struggle that they had to go through growing up. They want to take control of their own destiny and live life on their own terms. And quite frankly, Jason, I'm a little bit jealous. I'm proud of these.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I have no qualms or any bones about how they've made this work for them. And I think of my daughter who's 12, she and many, many kids, they're growing up in this world with, they don't know what it was like to not have the internet. They don't know what it was like to be bored, to which to some degree, I think it's our responsibility to teach them that so they don't become too reliant on technology. But if you can find a way to harness that, especially at a young age, and turn it into something that could carry you through life and put you far ahead of our generation, hats off to you. Run with it. Make it happen.
Plus, when you don't have to show up to an office for 40 hours a week and you can work from a beach, that's a plus too.
Not a bad gig at all.
But guys, let's call a spade a spade. It's this technology that has helped create this current reality. I mean, when I started working and when I first started my businesses, you needed a receptionist. And if you had long hours, you probably needed two receptionists. You probably needed someone to sort the mail and make photocopies, and you needed that runner, right? The gopher. Then you needed administrative assistance because who knew how to type, right? You needed secretaries. So suddenly you've got a small business, but you've got 10 people that today are redundant because you have answering services and you have an iPhone. I mean, just look at the efficiency that our current technology has. I mean, I could dictate something and all of a sudden I've got a Word document. Who needs to type anymore?
I started on Wall Street in the year 2000, right? We had, for every five brokers, there was at least two assistants, right? And these assistants were actually manually writing out trades in the year 2000. That's not that long ago. That's 22 years ago, right? So just imagine, technology has been advancing, accelerating so quickly just over the last 10 years. Imagine where we're going to be in 2030. I don't even know if we're going to be looking through a computer, maybe some virtual setting, some AR, some augmented reality, right? And that's the stuff that I really like looking at. And me and Luigi actually make some keen investments in some startup companies that are in that realm. But I think the whole future of the workforce, the workspace is changing, right? And all the people that say, no, they're going to come back. They're going to come back. Those are the people that are still going to Blockbuster right before they closed.
Yeah, I've had this argument with my best friend's wife. We've had this argument so many times. She's a school teacher. And this speaks a lot to where technology is taking us, because I've said, because she was complaining one night about the fact that schools weren't teaching cursive anymore. And I've had this argument with more than one person where I've said, listen, if it's important enough to you, you'll teach your children at home how to do cursive. Because to me, this is going to be an outdated skill that goes almost with the printing press. It's going to just become something that becomes less and less relevant in our world. And there are a lot of things that will come along that will make those types of things outdated. But she's all, no, we got to continue to teach these things. I just don't see it, because like you said, Luigi, typing may be something that's not even needed in the next how many years, because we're able to dictate exactly what we're saying, you know?
That kid who's not learning cursive will never have to sign anything.
Right, it's all digital.
Or some equivalent, right? He'll never have to sign a contract.
That was my argument, because that's what she's saying. She's like, how do they sign their name? I said, they do it electronically. That's how it's all, and that's the way the world is trending. And there's no way you can deny that. But
I'm gonna give you an analogy. You know, years ago, we would sign letters with wax, with a wax seal. To this day, we have a remnant of that. Sincerely, right, is the Latin term, sincerely, sans cera. Without wax. So if something was signed without wax, it was legitimate. So we still sign something sincerely because of wax. Do you own any wax? So it's impossible to tell a kid you need to use wax or the cursive equivalent. It's not going to happen.
I did not know that. That's the first I've ever heard that. That's great.
This is why he calls me the professor. I have to earn my keep.
Learn something new every day from him.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about what drives your company and how you're working with your partners and with all of your clients. So what are some of the core principles that you preach that are consistent for all small business owners across the board.
Can I take this one?
It's all you.
We really feel, Jason, that there are programs, services, and bells and whistles out there that are the regime of large business. We simply want to offer those products and services to small business. A guy that is running a family business, he has no idea the implications and the benefits of a tax credit. He doesn't know the creative loan products that are out there, let alone scaling strategies or other possibilities. That's why, you know, we focus on that small to medium-sized business. Once you get to a certain threshold, and maybe the threshold is 25 million, 30 million, what happens? You hire in-house CFO. You hire in-house general counsel. So now you're paying for that expertise. But until you get to that level, it's just not fair. We're simply trying to level the playing field.
This is something, as I was getting ready, I wanted to ask you guys, because I know this is something that you preach as well. Experience versus education. And I feel that this piggybacks a little bit on what we were saying before, because I know a lot of people in that generation now that would be thinking that college is the next step. I have to go to college. They're not thinking that way anymore. And we're seeing with the student loan crisis, everything that goes along with that. So from your guys' experience and your own personal beliefs, when it comes to experience versus education, which one do you feel is more important in today's evolving landscape?
Both, but not the way you think. Experience will always trump education, because what you're going to learn is going to constantly be changing. So you need to be a lifelong learner, number one. Me, for example, I barely graduated high school. I barely graduated high school because I failed a writing exam. But now I'm a contributor over at Forbes, right? So I didn't let that hold me back. The reason I'm able to contribute over at Forbes is because I dove deep into a field I was interested in. And I was able to teach myself and also gain experience from others that I worked around in order to become what they call an expert, a financial expert, in order to contribute to Forbes, right? With that being said, I do think college is important. Me and my wife have the same thing in my house, but I think it's more important for an experience for somebody, right? Rather than, it really depends on what you're going to go to school for. I think there's certain professions you're going to need to go to school for, right? And learn the basics of it. But I think everything can be on the job training these days, to make it simple.
Yeah, I know that I've always felt that way in regards to my college education. It was that actual social experience and being in that world and the people I got to meet. And when I think about it, what I look back on, a lot of the networking and speaking ability I learned, it was from my experience in college, and I've been able to parlay that into what I do today. But there were also some classes in there that I couldn't, I mean, I know I had to, we dissected something. It was a frog or a pig or something. I don't think that was relevant to anything I was doing in for college or what I'm doing today, but that's where I feel, if I had to look at and try to speculate, and this of course is pure speculation, I feel like it's going to have to become more a la carte, to where you don't have to have all these prerequisite biology classes if you're in marketing or communications, and you can pick and choose what you need that's going to give you the most well-rounded education when you leave, but it's well-rounded for the path that you want to walk professionally. That's, again, speculation. I don't know if they'll ever shift that way. Makes sense, Jason, to me, though.
Jason, if I may, maybe we could use your platform to clear the air and get the record straight, because there's a rumor out there that the boys at Shield Advisory Group don't promote higher education, okay? And like Matt said, it's both. The problem with the state of affairs of today's educational system in America, it is highly specialized. You don't become a general practitioner lawyer anymore. You become a intellectual property lawyer that specializes in copyrights, but only copyrights that deal with literature, but only literature that deals with screenplays, but only screenplays that deal with seven characters or more. So everything is highly specialized. Now, in education, traditionally, was a liberal arts education. You learn to read, you learn to write, you learn cursive, you learn some analytical skills, you learn some public speaking, you know, maybe some of the sciences, you understood what a periodic chart of elements is, right? But we got away from that because now everything is highly hyper specialized. Now, in business, you need to be a generalist. So taking these highly specialized skills is an accident waiting to happen. The worst business people are the greatest doctors, because doctors are highly specialized, but they can't run a practice, because nowhere in medical school are they teaching P&Ls and balance sheets. But when you open up a practice, that's the first thing you need to know. So that's the conundrum that we're in today, is we're not building small business owners in schools. And Lord knows business schools don't teach about business. But that's a different conversation for a different podcast.
This is the conspiracy. I hate to go conspiracy theory on this, but what the hell? I've always felt like the school system was building us to jump into the hamster wheel. Once we were done with school, we start serving the system. We go to work. And you had mentioned it before, guys. We go to work for X amount of years and you get your X amount of cars and you build your X amount of family and with your white picket fence. That was how the whole thing was built and designed. And now there's people saying, F that, I'm going this direction. That's like I said, how I've looked at it, but my opinion is my own.
I was reading something this morning and I called my partner. I said, Matt, I just read the greatest quote. And I'm paraphrasing, but the quote was something along these lines. There are three terrible addictions on this planet. Number one, heroin. Number two, alcoholism. And number three, a weekly salary.
I think a lot of generations fell into that 40-40-40 myth. Work 40 hours a week for 40 years and retire on 40% of your income. But I mean, if you look at the millennials and you look at Gen Z, they know it's a myth because they've seen their parents suffer through this, right? There's no more loyal corporations. There's no more pension plans. You got to save for retirement yourself. So why not give yourself a chance to get ahead and go out and do it on your own terms? And that's why I take my hats off to the millennials and the Gen Zers.
And you can be happier while you're doing it and avoid some of that frustration that the generations before us felt. There's no question that there's a lot of people walking that path, and they need people like you, Matt and Luigi, to make sure that they've got their compass pointed in the right direction. Well, let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk about the Liquid Lunch. So as I said before, you guys have built this podcast into one of the major pillars of your brand. So what inspired the Liquid Lunch? What made you bring it to life, and how has it evolved since you first brought it to the podcast world?
I'm going to let my partner take this one because he dragged me scratching and clawing. I don't want to do a podcast. Jay, like I told you, I'm an introvert. You know, I'd rather have dinner with four people rather than have dinner with 40 people. That's just my personality. However, it was his brainchild, and it's the best thing we ever did, because it's that classic notion. You educate and you offer to try to reap the benefits. So Matt, what gave you the idea of the Liquid Lunch Project?
You know, it was actually during COVID. We had just started the business, right? We were helping people. Everybody was stuck in their homes, and we were on Clubhouse. That app Clubhouse, and we'd run a room on Clubhouse. And next thing, first week it was 20, then it was 60, then it was 100, then maybe it was 500 people, I think was the max that we had in one room. And we were talking, and people were just saying, oh, this is great. You guys should do this. We didn't want to keep doing Clubhouse. We wanted to go out and we wanted to get points across and speak with people that we found interesting as well. But the name comes from the throwback of the days prior to COVID, where we believe more business is done in the bar than the boardroom, especially on Wall Street. You don't close deals in the boardroom. Deals are closed in the bar. So we used to go out for those three martini lunches, or say, let's go out for a liquid lunch, right? So we're working, doing business, getting to know people and enjoying each other's company and learning at the same time.
So how have you gone about finding the guests that you bring on the show to talk to? Were these people that joined you in the Clubhouse room? Or is it just some contacts that you've had, or how's that all come together?
Definitely had people from the Clubhouse rooms reach out to us. It's funny. I mean, honestly, we have a lot of people reach out to us. We don't really do that much outreach anymore. I think we're on a couple sites, these websites like PodMatch or Guestio, or something like that. But we have a pretty vast network of people that we've worked with in the past. And, you know, we've had CEOs of Fortune 500 companies like meetup.com. We had the chairman of Kayak on. One of the founders of Redfin was on our show, right? Since we do a lot of different things and we invest as well, we have a lot of people that come on and want to talk about their companies. And that's a great thing for us too, because we can make a decision within an hour sitting down to know somebody through a podcast if we want to give them our money and invest with them as well.
What kind of real tangible results have you seen in regards to growth, in regards to client acquisition, just by having this podcast out in the world?
It's really hard to quantify, okay? But I will tell you this. I will tell you that we've had from our marketing department who sends out emails and markets our business, we've gotten on the phone with people and hey Matt, how are you? What's up, professor? So it's being in business right now is not like it used to be where you could just send out mailers. Put up a billboard on the side of the road. You need to be omnipresent and find people where they are. Generally, if somebody sees, let's say, an email marketing campaign from us, first thing they're going to do is they're going to Google us. They Google us, our podcast comes up. What do? They hit play, they like it, they're drawn in, then they set up a call, right? Now, did they hire us from the podcast? No, but it gave us that know, like, and trust factor. So by the time they're on the phone with us, they've already made a decision to work with us. How many times does that happen? I don't know. But
It's not
outside of
quantifiable, guys. You know, the podcast is the poor man's Super Bowl ad. You know, I don't think anyone has increased revenue from a Super Bowl ad. It just costs so much and it's so ridiculous and it's so tedious, but you become a household name. So the podcast becomes the know, like, and trust. Like Matthew said, people don't buy Coke because they're on the Super Bowl, but people know Coke because it's on the Super Bowl.
You know, it's also not even directly in business, just in other areas that we're looking at and things that we do as far as investing goes. It's brought up a lot of opportunities to us, right? And one cool thing, you know this, when you have a platform and you have 10,000, 15,000 downloads a month, people want to come to you, right? And they want to get on your platform because obviously they have a self-interest in it too. But if we want to get to know somebody a little bit better, there's nothing better than saying, why don't you come on my show? And that,
Absolutely.
of course.
No, there's so much power in that. And I think that's one of the big things that anybody that's looking to bring podcasting into their brand building initiatives has to be aware of, is that it's not designed, it's not meant to just generate billions of dollars just because you have the podcast, but it's a tremendous networking tool. It can make you a household name, as Luigi said. And you're getting this opportunity to connect with people and have powerful, meaningful conversations that you may not have got to have. And at the same time, it's creating content that can help bring transformation to others. So when you put these conversations out for others to consume, what it can bring back to you could be tenfold any type of money that could be gained. That, of course, could be one of the byproducts, but just that overall networking part of it, the relationships you build could open up a world of opportunity. So you just have to go at it with the right attitude.
We take a very humble approach. There, we fall in love with our guests, right? Yourself included. There has not been one guest that we've had on our podcast that Matt and I didn't call each other after and say, wow, I didn't know that. You learned something new. And I hope, we pray that our audience and our small business clients have the same reaction, because we always ask people, we've asked people not to be on our podcast because there was nothing to offer. Like, we're not an advertising platform. If you want to sell your book, go sell it elsewhere. But if you can teach the audience something and you can show us how something works, help us lift the hood. If there's a lesson to be learned, you're welcome on our podcast. But if you're just looking to pawn your wares, there's other more efficient ways to do that.
That is one thing that we had to start doing about, I'd say, I don't know, 15 to 20 shows in, right, was vetting the guests more. After one guest that we spent an hour with, and we were new, we were starting out podcasting, but he was a relationship coach, but he's never been in a relationship before. So that was 45 minutes of our life wasted, pretty much, you know. And now I understand people are starting out and they're trying to do things, and you got to start somewhere, but you got to have some type of experience and relativity to what the topic is. Look, you can't give me advice on being married if you've never been married. I'm one of those guys.
Yeah, and I think that when your mindset is, I'm bringing value to this podcast, I'm bringing value to this conversation, versus just trying to go into sales mode, it makes for a much better listener experience. And ultimately, that's what podcasters are looking for, because they need their audience to be fully entrenched in what's happening with that show, so they continue to listen to future episodes and they tell others to listen as well. So there's definitely got to be some level of vetting with the guests that you bring to the table. But I think all three of us would agree, if you're going to be a guest on a podcast, root yourself in value and bring valuable insight and knowledge and expertise to the show. That's going to put you a leg up over
You got to do a better job, because we slipped through your vetting cracks.
Oh, I let this one slide. I will say two things I'm going to add about the Liquid Lunch Project. One, Luigi, I would never think that you would be, you're an introvert. And the experiences that I've had with you now here on this show and on Liquid Lunch, no, you're not an introvert. Two, you guys got me to sing, which is something that I think
all of us. Twice.
I think your audience wants to hear it.
They're going to have to go listen to Liquid Lunch, because no one's ever got me to do that. Now, I'm not saying that I sang the whole song, but it was more than I've ever sang on a podcast. So hats off to you guys for breaking me out of that shell.
It was a good time.
It was fun. No, obviously, EOB Society, go check out Liquid Lunch Project. There's a lot of great episodes in there, but you can hear my voice as well. And even I even hesitate to call it a singing voice, but we'll call it that for argument's sake. Well, guys, as expected, this has been a needle-moving conversation today. I can't thank you guys enough for taking the time to join me here on Evolution of Brand and sharing all of your insight. And I know there's a lot more that we probably could have gotten to that we didn't. So I want to leave the door open to not only invite you guys back to join me again, but to let EOB Society know how they can keep this good thing going by connecting with you for more and checking out the Liquid Lunch Project and really getting fully entrenched in the world of Matt and Luigi. How do they make that happen?
So the best thing everybody can do is go to www.theliquidlaunchproject.com or follow us on Instagram at The Liquid Lunch Project.
And Jason?
Yes, sir.
On behalf of small business owners in America, we really thank you for elevating the discourse. Unfortunately, there's a lot of lowest common denominator going on in the small business industry. So when there's companies and podcasts and newsletters, whatever it may be, that elevates the discourse, we embrace it, we appreciate it, and we thank you.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I'm going to continue to do my part to do just that and bring value to the world with each and every podcast that goes out on this network. Before I let you guys go, I got to ask if you could go back in time and share one thing with your pre-evolved self that would completely change the game for you today, what would it be?
I would have moved to Florida sooner.
A little warmer down there in this time of year, right?
Tax plan is a little better too.
I would have met Matt 10 years earlier.
Oh, that's sweet. Oh.
Well,
I went there in a really manly kind of way, man.
Leaving on that warm note, guys, again, thank you so much for joining me here on Evolution of Brand today. It was a great time.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, Jason.
Take care, Jay. Thank you, pal.
We definitely covered a lot today, EOB Mafia, and I'm grateful that I've had the opportunity to get to know Matt and Luigi thanks to the podcast platform. I highly recommend checking out the Liquid Lunch Project, and if you're looking for capital to scale your business, as well as some guidance to make sure you're doing it right, Matt and Luigi are the guys you need in your corner. Connect with them today and discover how they can help you take your brand to new heights. I'd like to once again thank Matt and Luigi for delivering so much powerful information on Evolution of Brand today. To get more from this episode, visit evolutionofbrand.com, click on the archives link, then go to episode 126. Or head straight to jasoncircone.com/Matt and Luigi for instant access to links, resources, and show notes. And I'm talking primo notes. I got an A. Want to support Evolution of Brand? Be sure you're following and you're subscribed so you're the first person to know when new content goes live. Leave a rating and written review on Apple Podcasts and at podchaser.com, as well as a 5-star rating on Spotify. And as always, recommend this episode of Evolution of Brand to one person in your circle who you know will be impacted by what they hear. And with that, this episode of Evolution of Brand is officially in the history books. It no longer is. It was. But fear not, EOB Mafia, because we'll be reconvening once again for episode 127 when it comes your way in the very near future. Until then, jump back in the archives and check out some of the great conversations that have unfolded right here on Evolution of Brand. Until we meet again, this is Jason Sircone reminding you to never stop evolving. You've heard the game-changing benefits of podcast guesting discussed here on Evolution of Brand many, many times. Now, these thoughts are in permanent ink in the all-new best-selling Podmatch Guest Mastery book. Myself, along with 17 other dynamic, captivating podcast guesting specialists, have come together to contribute our insights to help you master the guest mic, reach expert status in your niche, and take your brand to the next level. Discover how all of us have not only utilized the Podmatch community to grow, but how we've enhanced our own brand and skill sets by collaborating with podcasters across the globe. And if you're looking to be a better podcast host, you can pick up a copy of the best-selling Podmatch Host Mastery book as well. Available now on Amazon. Click the link in the show notes to grab your copy today.